Welcome to the Dog Trainers Podcast,
a podcast created by dog trainers for dog trainers or anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back, and thank you so much for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast. Mariano Alvarez here, Brent Labrada, and this is going to be Season 2, Episode 23. We want to discuss the ins and outs of work-life balance. It's something that we've had a hard time with, but before we get into that, we wanted to give some shout-outs to people that have shown us love on Instagram. So, without further ado, hello to Lucid Canine. How are you? Thank you to Squanchy77. I love that name when I heard that. Body and Mind Canine. What's up? What's up? Michelle McGraw from Say It Once. What's up? Say hello to Vinny for me. And Rob from New York, who's been doing much better. He sent us a message, and I can't tell you, Rob, because I know you listen, how happy we are to hear that, man, and I can't wait to see you. So, Robert.exesw. Rob, you got to tell me what the hell that means. But otherwise, we love you guys. Can't wait to see you guys. And with that, over to you, man.
What is up, everybody? Here we are. This is our first episode in a really, really long time where it's just me and Mariano. I have to do a quick little shameless plug, though, because we have something very exciting that we want to share with you guys. If you guys don't follow us on Instagram, we are having the honor to do a seminar with Michael Ellis himself on October 20th to 23rd over here at my ranch in northern L.A., and it is the first seminar of its kind. So it is the very, very first dog training seminar where we're not training dogs. We're actually training humans on how to train clients and work with staff and people. In essence, we're working a lot on the human side of dog training. And to try to get, dog trainers better with clients, to become more effective educators, to become better salespeople. Like, these human skills that we learn and that we go over during the seminar are going to be invaluable to anyone who wants to jump on. So if you guys are interested, go check us out on eventbrite.com. If you guys go to our Instagram, you can see the link in our bio, and please come. It's going to be a really, really fun time. Me and Mariano vow to make it the best seminar you've probably ever been to. So we're doing a lot of things different than the average seminar, and we're excited to see you guys there. So let us know if you have any questions. You can email us at dogtrainerspodcast@gmail.com. All right. So, that was long. All right, here we go. So today we're going to be talking about work-life balance, right? And there's a lot of things like, does it exist? Is it a thing? Should I have more life? Should I have more work? Should I do this? And I think kind of the basic dog trainer answer is it depends, right? So I think it depends on a lot of things. It depends on what your level of ambition is. It depends on what your life situation is. It also is based on your temperament. It's based on, you know, all these things. So when you watch, you know, when you hear things where people are like, you got to grind and you got to do this, or you hear people that are like, oh no, you got to take care of your body and take care of yourself. Again, these are all different tactics, right, in life, but different strokes for different folks. So I want to just preface this whole seminar, like, know who you are and know what you can handle, know how you've been since you were young, right? And start from there, right? Because sometimes we can shame ourselves into working too hard. Sometimes we can shame ourselves into working less, if that makes sense. Like, people will feel bad that they're working all the time, and so there's all these things. So as we talk about that, just keep that in mind. This is going to be advice. What we're going to do is we're going to share with you guys our specific stories, and hopefully you guys can pull some valuable information from that. We are still in our journey, so by no means are we done. But I think maybe by sharing our stories, maybe you guys will be able to pick up a couple tips here and there.
Absolutely. And we were talking about this the other day, and we figured maybe the best way to approach the beginnings of this conversation of work-life balance, because it is different for everyone, is to discuss what happens when you don't have that. So the big downside of working too hard, of course, is inevitably you start to burn out. Now, we figured it would be worthwhile to kind of discuss our personal experiences with burnout, or with, you know, we've all had employees that have burnt out. We've all ourselves have felt burnt out. And I think we all understand that this is something that's bad. It's something that hinders your performance. It's something that affects the quality of service you can offer to a client or a dog. So burnout, I guess for me personally, and maybe for Brent it's different, the weird thing about it is when I'm in a state of burnout, it's not like I'm done, I need a break. It's more like I'll keep going because I'm stubborn and maybe kind of dumb, but my performance is just worse and worse. And I don't realize it's getting, it's not like I wake up tomorrow and be like, oh, that was kind of half-assed, right? Mm-hmm. When I realize how stark, how obvious I was burnt out is if we go on like a vacation or if we somehow or another take a little break and then tomorrow I just feel refreshed and I'm doing lessons with dogs and lessons with clients and I'm like, man, I'm just on today. You know, there's even been moments where I'll come back from a little break and I'll do a few sessions and I'm like, oh, I'm kind of like a pretty good dog trainer, you know, when I have the energy for it. And then it makes me feel bad for all the lessons that I had done like the week prior. And I'm like, shit, like I find myself wanting to reach out to them and like make it up to them, mm-hmm. you know? So that's been my experience with burnout. What about you?
Yeah, the good question. Hold on. Something in my throat. For me, burnout, I guess if I had to put a definition to it, it's like, you know, you have your physical burnout, you have your emotional burnout. Both make me dislike the things that I'm normally passionate about, right? So like, mm-hmm. like it's a silly feeling to be like, someone wants to give me $4,200, but I don't want it because of the perceived stress of having to train that dog, right? Or I have a client who can't wait to see me and wants to see me next week because they were referred to me by their friend. And my first emotional response is like, ugh, not another client. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because I got into this industry to be like, I love people. I love dogs. I want to help as much as I can. And so like, that's my passion and my intrinsic drive. And as soon as my body or my mind is like, no, that sounds like a lot of work. Like I'm starting to get burned out, right? Because the thing that is supposed to fulfill me, I'm now actually associating with stress and kind of getting scared of, right? So that's what I think burnout is for me. And what's funny is, I mean, I tried to separate the emotional versus the physical. In my journey, I realized that they kind of go hand in hand, right?
Yeah, like, I was going to say, I can't do that either. If I'm physically tired, I get emotionally like sad or something. Like mm-hmm. I was pretty sick a couple weeks ago and depressed isn't the word, but it's just like, I don't know. I just feel more vulnerable or something. It's weird, mm. right? So I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. You just want a big cuddle. You just want to be cuddled. Get some soup. Yeah. So I think the big things for prevention of burnout, man, like it's a long time coming, learning these strategies to help oneself. And what I'm learning in my 30s now is like everything our parents tried to teach us when we were kids, right? Like go to sleep on time, eat good food, go outside and play, like all these little things that our parents tried to teach us when we were tiny little kids. I spent my whole 20s trying to like hack that system and trying to like break those rules. Like I can work on 3 hours of sleep. I can drink this. I can eat this crap. I can do all this stuff. And I didn't, you know, for you guys to know, like I didn't have this complex that to be a very emotional person. And what I mean by emotional, I mean like I had emotions, but like I could control my emotions, right? And I could suppress my emotions. And my whole childhood, people would be like, Brent, you're just so chill, you're so relaxed, blah blah blah. And then when I was 31, after starting my own company and grinding and having all these employees, like I had my first emotional breakdown when I was 31 years old, right? And the emotional breakdown was literally just crying for no reason and just feeling like this release of something because I've been stuffing things down for years, right? And that was such a big wake-up call to be like, something's not right, man. You got to get your shit together, right? And so in my 30s, what I'm realizing is the things I have to get back together are all the things that my parents tried to teach me when I was a kid, right? I'm getting good sleep now. I'm playing a little bit more. My physical fitness is coming up. I'm eating good foods, you know, so I'm not like getting like food comas often. So I'm on a regimen now, and I just find that so ironic, like the stuff that your parents tried to teach you when you're a kid, is really what is just good health, right? Good mental and physical health. I think it's really funny for me.
I find it really funny that as dog trainers, we preach structure and balance and, you know, moderation and so on. But a lot of my dog trainer friends tend to struggle with that in one form or another. I think it's this funny kind of built-in irony of like, our job is to teach you how to moderate and give your dog well-balanced, well-rounded life. But our job is also so taxing. It's hard for you to have that as the teacher of that. So it is kind of funny. And I wanted to give a little bit of structure to what we started discussing, which was that it's important to, it's basically what you were saying in the very beginning was be careful whose advice you take. Because your work-life balance can exist, obviously. Like, yes, like anybody can find a balance. But is there like one ideal work-life balance? No, because everybody's different, right? And everybody's jobs are different and so on. Like, what if somebody's job's just more taxing than yours or whatever and they need more time? So the way I think to avoid those pitfalls that you've made and I've made of, oh, well, I listened to this person and they said work less, but I don't want to work less and I feel weird because I don't want to work less and I can't relax anyway, so I'm like wasting my relax time, you know, versus trying too hard, burning out, blah, 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 is make sure that you find your version of this balance where work does not consume your whole life and your personal issues do not consume your time at work. When you can separate those two things, when you can be present here, present there, don't let them bleed over, at least not often. I get like that it's the real world, maybe hard day, whatever, right? Argument with like a staff member or something. But that is work-life balance. And Brent and I have kind of sat down together and I want to go over some of the things that we've discussed, which is our friends or people we know or people that we look up to or whatever, they have different forms of that balance. So like for example, I'll give one. We have a friend, a mutual dog trainer friend, who he and his girlfriend work their asses off together, like one business, and they're two people that work a ton of dogs at a time. Like they must work like basically 16-hour days each. But the way that they make that happen is they work for 3 months, right? Two, 3 months. And then they take weeks off at a time, every few months. So they kind of like go, make all like a hell of a lot of money, then take a break and kind of, you know, and chill. And so it's this very like, you know, interval training type thing is run, 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 break. Versus the more typical, you know, person who's like, I work 9 to 5. I don't really need to take weeks off every 3 months because I just work 9 to 5 and I have like a more regular balance.
Yeah, no, 100%. And they do very well for themselves. And that's, that's one thing that that I've always admired about them is that they're able to knock that out. Now, other forms of work-life balance, right? Like I'll kind of talk about one that I exercise nowadays, right? Obviously I've, over the last couple of years, I've created more time for myself, created more time for my personal needs and habits, right? But for the most part, I focus on whatever needs focusing at that time. So, I actually heard this from, who was it? I think it was probably Gary V or Simon Sinek, one of these people that I follow on in their podcast. But the basic idea was like, there is no such thing as 50-50 in work-life balance, right? Like this, you put attention to things that need nurturing. Like you water the plants that need water. You don't go, you get water, you get water, you get water, you get water. Like if you notice, like you tend to things, right? And so
Can I pause you for just 1 second? But don't lose that train of thought. Please. Yeah. Simon Sinek, right? The only reason I wanted to interject is because I've learned this lesson, which we'll talk about at length later, but just super quick. You can try to treat everything as you get water, but it's a very inefficient way to look at things. Some of them don't get watered enough and some of them get watered too much.
100% because not all plants are the same, right?
Correct.
Or they don't need all the equal amounts of water, right? So when we look at balance, we always think of equality versus need, right? And most of the things that we're trying to manage in our lives are living things, right? Whether they're our families, our employees, our clients, our dogs, you know, our kids, whatever they are, they're living things. So they need different things at different times of year, all that stuff. So what I like to do is like, I like to, if I have nothing else, I'm focusing all on business. I'm focusing on sales. I'm focusing on my team. I'm focusing on staff. Now, let's say I have friends coming into town. Well, they let me know. So then I take 3 days off. I focus all on my friends. But I grinded all that 2 weeks prior, right? So that I could focus on my friends. And let's say someone in my family got like sick and needed help with the kids. Well, if I know about it, I have the ability to stop what I'm doing and go take care of those kids. And I give that, you know, nurturing intent, and I tend to that if I can, right? So there's it's like I'm juggling a lot of plates, and I'm able to just switch up which plates need my attention at that time. And that's what's allowed me to feel like I'm putting my hands on many things. And also I would say, that's also kind of helps my brain. Like that's my temperament, right? Like mm-hmm. I can't just do one thing. Mm-hmm. I can't just do two things. I have to do multiple things all at the same time in order to feel stimulated, in order to feel like, productive, in order to feel, you know, useful, right? So that's how my brain works. And so that's how my brain tends to manage their life. Now, the hardest thing though, I will tell you this, the downfall to having that temperament is I used to spread myself so thin with external things, helping others, that the biggest thing that I would forget to do is take care of myself, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. But taking care of oneself, instead of giving all of your energy and all you got to everything else, learning to take care of myself over the last couple of years is the biggest game changer of my whole life. So we'll talk more about it later.
Absolutely. And I think Brent and I had a heart-to-heart the other day, and we kind of came to this really fascinating conclusion where his pitfalls and my pitfalls are like perfect opposites. And maybe that's why we work so well together. Mm-hmm. So for example, Brent likes to take on many tasks at once to feel like active and inspired and productive. And I can understand that, right? It's one of those things where like I can do that sometimes because I can work hard and multitask like when I need to. But I'm most happy when there's not a ton going on. Like I don't mind a tedious or difficult task, but it's simplicity that I like. Mm-hmm. So when a lot of things get thrown at me out of the blue, I feel like overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Whereas Brent like thrives in it. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And it's something that I think is worth bringing up because Brent is talking about the importance of self-care, which we'll get into. For me, what helps me more than anything is just organization, simplifying, delineating. And so I also want to spend some time in a little bit to talk about organizing your time and organizing your schedule.
Yeah, well, I think, and again, if there was a Venn diagram, self-care and organization kind of go hand in hand a little bit, right?
Sure.
How do you tend to, you know, I was describing kind of how my brain works and you were talking about setting things up. How have you seen that kind of play out in your life?
Setting things up?
Like a scheduling thing, like the different way that you try to achieve balance.
So I too, luckily have been better, like obviously not perfect, but better at finding this balance as I kind of achieve like out of my 20s into my 30s. Some of the ways that I've been doing that have been, number one, try to feel less guilty about setting time for yourself outside of work. Like if you guys, for our longtime listeners, you guys have heard all the jokes about us with jiu-jitsu and everything else, and Brent would get all annoyed. And if I haven't talked about it much lately, I haven't been training that much lately. And honestly, it's just because me and my fiance luckily got a bigger home and it's further from the gym. And I can't bring myself to convince myself to spend the extra drive time. But I love that gym. And it's not all bad news. I just started boxing again, which I've been doing forever anyway. But even when I was closer to the gym, it really genuinely was hard for me to like go because I would feel bad for driving to the gym and work out. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. And so I got comfortable telling myself like, no, you deserve to do what you want to do. And it's also fitness, right? That was one of them. Another one was I like to think of my schedule. Excuse me. I like to think of my schedule in terms of a week instead of a day, because it allows me to batch tasks. So like I'm not the kind of person who's good at, you know, do this from 9 to 10 and then do that from 10 to 11 and then do this from 11 to 12. And it's like all these three different things and then do all that like 5-6 days a week. Mm-hmm. I'm a lot better at like you know, Thursday, we're going to do all the social media and all the podcasting. And then Friday, I just get to do all straight dog training. And then Saturday, we get to do deep cleaning. And I get to schedule a day instead of like hours of that day. It just simplifies things for me. Mm-hmm. And it helps me plan long term because it's like, hey, Mariano, I'm going to be in Phoenix. Are you free at six? I'm like, Is it Thursday? Yes, I will, because that's social media day and we're done at this time, right? Mm-hmm. So it makes it seem less stressful for me. And then one more is... this may sound stupid. Brent put me onto this book by, I think his name is Nir Farrell, mm-hmm. right? Indistractable. Mm-hmm. And in this book, Nir makes a point that is an excellent point and well articulated, but it made me feel super bad about how I treat my fiance, because the point was about how much time do you give your family? And he set it up as, you give all this time to your business and all this time to this and all this time to that. And your family are the ones who just get the leftover scraps. Mm-hmm. You just kind of fill them in like where you have a little bit of time. So instead, I had to start like physically in my calendar, scheduling time that's non-negotiable me and McKenna time. Mm-hmm. And it's been great because it's not a ton of time. Like I'm a busy guy, you know, podcasting and business and whatever, but it's not a ton of time. But because I can tell myself like in my mind, it's already decided. This mm-hmm. is what it is. It's mm-hmm. non-negotiable. I won't be taking clients. I won't be taking calls. I'm not like constantly looking over my shoulder at the work phone. Mm-hmm. So it's present, real time. So it's very potent, even though it's not a lot. Mm-hmm. So I would say set time for your friends and family. Batch tasks on a weekly basis because it helps me a lot. Like it really saves me a lot of stress. Yeah. And get comfortable doing the things that you need or want to do to help you decompress. Those would be my big ones.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think one point to make is I'm going to go out on a limb and make a generalization. Most people listening to this podcast, we became dog trainers to help, right? Like we didn't become dog trainers because like, we're going to make a shit ton of money. If you're good at what you do, that might be a byproduct, right? But we got into this because we want to help dogs. We want to help people. And so we're very passionate about that side of the industry of our jobs. And the interesting thing is helping is typically one of those things that we would do for free, right? So if anytime you're doing a task, just like when a dog is chasing a squirrel, they'll keep chasing that squirrel. Like anytime you're doing a task that is intrinsically satisfying to you, it's really easy to keep wanting to do that, even to your detriment, right? Mm-hmm. Even like I want to help 7 clients a day. I want to help 8 clients a day. And so because we want to help so much, it is so easy, whether it's help my staff, help these dogs, go to that shelter, work with these clients, you know, serve these people. It's so easy to spread yourself so thin to the point where you have zero time scheduled for yourself. And so I wanted to go over just some real basic game changer tips that we learned along the way, especially starting our own businesses, that helped us just regain a little bit of control over our schedule and regain a little bit of control. So I'm the type of guy, I get hangry, right? Mm-hmm. So like if I don't eat, I get really stubborn. I stopped giving a shit about everything, right? So the very first thing that I learned how to do on my work days that I needed to do is take a lunch break. I know it sounds so simple and so stupid, guys, but when you're a workaholic, like I'm very much a workaholic and my ADD kicks in and I can find 100 things to do, you know, before having a meal, take a 90-minute lunch break, right? I know the standard is like 30 minutes to an hour, but 90 minutes. And the biggest reason I say a 90-minute lunch break is because you obviously need time to like prep your meal, right? Or if you're cooking fresh food or heat up your meal, whatever.
Yeah, drive to the drive-thru.
Yeah, drive to the drive-thru or go to the restaurant. Like I used to go to restaurants and sit down and just the average restaurant time was anywhere between like 45 minutes to an hour, right? And then I didn't want to be like, oh, fuck, I got to get back to the thing. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, 90 minutes is a sweet spot because it's more than the average lunch. But you have time, you have kind of like a buffer on the beginning and a buffer towards the end where you can write emails, where you could call your family, where you could text all those people who you haven't texted back. Like, and it just allows you to that extra 30 minutes allows you to catch up with where you are in that day, Mm-hmm. Right. So like sometimes like I'll be like, oh, I got to get back to these 10 people. And then I wait till 8 p.m. and then I'm not motivated to do it. Right. So it just allows you to most of those people are my family, right? Like not, not business clients. Right. So that just allows you to catch up so that you don't feel behind in that day. Cause sometimes when you feel behind, that anxiety doesn't help your mental state.
Absolutely. And it also allows you to do it because you could throw it into an hour lunch, but it's just not fun.
Yeah.
And it allows you to do it while eliminating that, like that pent up anxiety, that pent up resistance. Because the problem that I have that it's if I get this sense of resistance to something, I just don't do it.
Yeah.
And it throws me off and it limits my potential. Like if we're keeping it real. So this is a problem that I absolutely am aware of and I address like every day.
Yep.
But something like giving yourself an extra 30 minutes allows you to do all this and not while you're doing it, feel like I'm texting her back, but fuck, like I'm wasting my whole lunch.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Then you still get those 30 minutes to yourself to like do whatever you want. Right. So yeah, I think that that's an excellent point. 90 minute lunch break for sure.
Yep. What's the next one?
Well, setting days off. That's a big one. That especially for someone like me right now, like it's hard for me to set hours for myself, but I do absolutely have set days off. So setting days off would be, I can't tell which I like better. Like as an employee, like before I started a business, I was never really one to complain about like, oh, they're separated or oh, they're together. Or, oh, it's not on the weekend. Like I never really cared too much as long as I got my days. And I saw benefit to all of it. Like I kind of liked having separated days because then it's never like a 5-day stretch with a strenuous job, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and then there was always that thing. Like I feel like me and Brent, when we met, we were both such hard workers that it was like, if I only have one day off, when I come back, if there's slack, I can pick it up. And I'm never gone from this place for 2 days at a time. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So setting days off, however you need to do it, I find extremely beneficial. And if you guys out there who aren't single, I would go past beneficial to like straight up non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
Because my fiance needs time and my energy and my affection, and you know, her and I had a discussion like just before my break, Brent. It was like a few weeks ago, and she came to me and like was trying to be very polite and delicate with her words, but ultimately it was like, you're so stressed with work that like when I do get time with you, you're like mean, and that made me feel so bad.
Yep,
you know, hence like sticking to my days off, because every now and again, you know how it is as a business owner, it's like, oh sure, I'll get him in on a Sunday, it's fine, you know, and she luckily hired an assistant for me that like doesn't mind telling me no. So like, you know, this weekend I'm going out of town for my bachelor party and I have all these, like today is gonna be nuts for me because tomorrow I'm not here. Mm-hmm. And Saturday normally is a work day for me too.
Yep.
And you know, and I would tell them like, oh yeah, I could probably squeeze them in on Monday. And my assistant would be like, no, you know, like they'll wait. And so it's very helpful to stick to your days off, keep them as days off, even if you have nothing planned, even if you're single, because you guys all know how it is from before you started businesses. That funny dichotomy of like waking up on a work day, like on time and everything, and you're like, okay, well, you know, my day's going to go to this. Versus for some reason, you just wake up on your own like earlier than you would on a work day, but on an off day. And your initial thought's like, fuck that, let me go back to sleep for an hour. It's like, ooh, what can I do with my time, right? So it's nice to be able to have this expectation, and you deserve it. And clients understand it, by the way. So take your days off. That's a huge one.
Yeah, and we, you know, you said something that kind of reminded me. Like, many of my relationships prior to me implementing these rules, right? Like, my last girlfriend, sweet, wonderful, kind, but I would usually see her after work, right? And usually would take me about an hour and a half to decompress and get my mind right. And if I was hungry, oh man, I'd get hangry. And mind you, like, I don't want this to come off like, oh, Brent was really mean to his girlfriend. Like, no, I just wasn't the kind, fun, loving version of myself that I'd like to be. Right. And, and that definitely was a problem in how we would interact regularly. You know, we would regularly see each other and I just wouldn't be 100%. And, I wouldn't be the best versions of myself that I wanted to be and show up in that relationship. So that just reminded me like how important these things are, because you can potentially damage relationships with people you love.
And what Brent's trying to say is he's such a pimp.
That such even, a pimp.
That even 65, 70% of him is still, you know. No, I hear you 100%, yeah. Because, again, McKenna and I had that conversation, and like I'm not bragging about this because this isn't braggable. This is a problem that I have, and mm-hmm. I know it's mm-hmm. I've heard it before as an ADHD thing, and I've heard it before as an anxiety thing, mm-hmm. and I've always had huge anxiety since I was very young. Mm. But it's hard for me to feel empathetic. Like, I'm not like a mushy feely person, and again, I'm not bragging that, but when my fiance brought that to my attention, let me tell you, I felt so bad. I like wanted to cry. Mm.
Hey, at least you're not a psychopath. That's good.
You know, yeah, not for that reason. Yeah.
The next one. So this one seems really simple, right? But if you're an entrepreneur, this next one, if you're an entrepreneur and you're running a business and building a business, this can be on a sliding scale. I'll be very honest, because the next rule, organizing your time rule, is setting work hours for yourself. Right now, this one is a little weird, because when you're first starting your business, it's not weird to like work when there's business, right? Like sometimes there's no business. Sometimes there is business. Sometimes someone wants to see you at 8 a.m. Sometimes they want to see you at 8 p.m. And if you're building your business, right, you can start, you know, you might have to flop around a little bit. However, once you're not in like a scarcity mentality, it is very important. Let's try and funnel people between 9 and 6. Let's try and get people here between 11 and 5, like whatever your work hours are. Have a hard start to your day, have a hard stop to your day, and obviously your 90 minute lunch somewhere in between. For me, my 90 minute lunch isn't the same time every day. It kind of fluctuates between a 2 hour gap, but I know that there's a lunch at some point in my day. And I've even talked to my assistant. I'm like, make sure I have a break. Boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. Right. And what's cool is it also going back to that 90 minute lunch. When I take those lunches, that's usually when I'm like calling Mariana with ideas. Cause I'm like, oh, I have this idea. I have this idea. I have this idea. And what's so funny is if I had a 60 minute lunch, I wouldn't have time to think of those ideas. I wouldn't have time to be creative in the other aspects of my life and my other ambitions, right? So that's also really helpful for me.
Absolutely. And the next one is set time to catch up on your life, the rest of your life, right? Errands, mm-hmm. projects, trips, friends, etc., right? Mm-hmm. So this is one that I struggle with to this day. You know, it's hard. And and the only other one that I would add into that is time for just yourself. Like, I'm one of those. It's funny that I'm in such a like a personable, like customer service kind of field, as dog training is, you know, because I'm one of those that I absolutely recharge my battery when I'm alone. I'm a total introvert by nature. Mm-hmm. I've developed some social skills, and I can do lessons, and I can have fun, and I can be like personable. Mm-hmm. But my preference, like what recharges my battery, is like I'm just home alone, nobody talking to me, I'm just watching a movie. That's me.
Yep.
So setting time aside for those errands, projects, trips, and if you need it, just for yourself, just chill out, you know, that's been a huge, huge game changer for myself as well.
Yep. And my version of this is like, I try to fit this in my workday if I can, right? So like if I have a client at 1 and a client at 4, well, around 2, I'm going to go to Costco and get that stuff I needed, you know, because that's just how my brain works. Like I need to fit it in, because usually on my days off, I want to do other things, like be with my dogs or work out or do something like that, you know. But however you catch up on your life, it could be during your work schedule, it could be on your days off. I just found in the past that if I try to catch up on stuff on my day off, it ends up not being a relaxing day off necessarily. Doesn't mean you can't do a couple tasks, but I've had days off where I'm like catching up on 6 things, and then it's 5 p.m. and I'm just like, I've been moving from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Yeah.
And haven't rested, relaxed, or done anything rejuvenating.
Totally. You know, and then you feel cheated, and it's kind of like, it's like, it annoys you. Right? Yeah. I completely understand that. And it's like, man, like my whole day's gone. This kind of sucks, right?
So fit it in where you can is the whole point, you know? Totally. And then here's another one, guys. Last one for this one. Don't be scared to tell your clients you're booked. or that you're, that you don't have space. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big one. Again, if you're an entrepreneur and you want to serve people and, or you like money or whatever it might be, it is always frame it like we are booked at that time. Okay. Like if you want to take Wednesday off, you're not taking Wednesday off. Oh, sorry. We're booked on Wednesday. Now, mm-hmm. the reason for this, sometimes you might need 3 days off for mental health reasons. Sometimes you might need 1 day off. You don't want your clients to feel like, oh my gosh, what they're going through something, right? Mm-hmm. So just as like a, as a little note for how you portray it to everybody. Oh, sorry, we're booked at that time. Is there another time that we, that works for you? You know, so that way we don't have to be like, well, actually I have to take 3 days off because of blah, blah, blah. We're booked. Don't be shy to say that you're booked.
Totally. Totally. And I feel like being willing to tell your client that you're booked so that you can give yourself just downtime for whatever you may need it for, mental health, physical health, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I feel like that segues us perfectly into a bit of a more detailed discussion regarding like self-care. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those terms, right? Like I get that. A little self-care, namaste, welcome to NPR. But like, what actually does that mean, right? Mm-hmm. So a way that I like to...
Actually, could we take a commercial break real quick?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sure. So let's take a quick commercial break. When we come right back, we will start discussing self-care.
Sounds good.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to Dog Trainers Podcast. You know what's a great way to support this podcast? By becoming a sponsor today. With sponsoring the podcast, you'd be helping us make this show the best it can be and so much more. From hosting more local events, traveling throughout the country, and connecting with trainers from around the world. Ultimately getting you, the listener, more of the content that you love. For more information, please contact us at dogtrainerspodcast@gmail.com. Or visit our Instagram page at Dog Trainers Podcast. Thank you, guys, and now back to the show.
All right, guys, welcome back. Once again, this is Season 2, Episode 23, Work-Life Balance. Now, just before the break, we prefaced what we were going to get into regarding self-care. What does that mean? What does that look like? What are some ways to ensure that you're taking care of yourself? Because it's easy for things to slip through the cracks. I notice personally that self-care for me, or lack of self-care, it's not like I know I should do this, I'm just not going to. Mm-hmm. It's more like I had no idea that I was burnt out till I'm burnt out.
Yeah.
So the way that it was put to me was, I mean, everybody's heard this, right? Like if you can't be there for yourself, then you can't be there for others, right? If you yourself are just depleted and you're just, you don't have anything to offer, then what good are you anyway, type thing. Like my favorite version of this is you can't get blood from a stone, right? Mm-hmm. So some simple things that we want to go over regarding self-care are just kind of like quick tips. And once again, you guys, we know this sounds crazy simple. We get it. But sometimes, you know, you hear it one more time or you hear it a different way from a different person and it finally clicks. I mean, it happens to me like daily, right? So here are some super simple ones. Get enough sleep, eat well, which means don't eat a bunch of crap, and also make sure that you eat regularly. This is a problem that I personally have throughout the day. Mm. Like I won't eat enough in a day. I eat 1-2 meals a day, which is bad. I shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. So set times aside to sit down and eat your meals. Make sure you're eating good stuff. And also make sure that you do things that you enjoy doing and try not to like judge yourself for those things. Like for example, mm-hmm. Brent and I think have both gone through our periods where after work, dogs are taken care of, like everything's good, or at least for a few hours or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. How to sit down and play some Fallout. Like who gives a shit, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. If it's something you like, if it's a show that you like, whatever, Jersey Shore, like whatever, right? Then if you enjoy it, if it helps you decompress and kind of pull yourself away from work, mm-hmm, then do it.
Totally. Totally. Like let yourself relax. And then one thing I would add to this is I would say exercise and I think that's an important one specifically for me. I haven't publicized this on Instagram or anything like that, but I plan on losing 40 pounds by the time that we do the Michael Ellis seminar. So I've been training for the last 2 months. I'm down 20 pounds now. And so I'm trying to get fit for a lot of reasons. But going back to self-care, like, you know, I've gone through stages of anxiety and stress with business and employees. And most of the time, it's not even my stress. It's just managing people. You end up grabbing onto some of their stress and it sticks with you and it's really hard to get rid of sometimes. So that led to a lot of, I think the opposite problem that Mariano has. Mariano doesn't eat enough and I would eat too much, right? So food for me is a comfort thing. And so I would eat a pizza, a whole pizza by myself, or I would reward myself at the end of the day because I was so stressed and I felt like I did such a good job that I'd go get like a big bowl of pasta, right? And so before you know it, you know, I told myself I would never be over 200 pounds. And then I was weighing in at like 230 and I was like, God damn, what in the hell happened over this last year? And so kind of just had to make a deal with myself of that I'm going to fix that, right? And getting sleep, eating well, doing things I enjoy and exercising regularly. That has been a great change for my mental health, for my self-discipline, for all of that stuff. And I've also quit drinking, right? I used to also drink to help manage my stress. And that's also been a big helpful as well. And like just even these little life changes, right? I mean, I've done spurts of diets. I've done spurts of exercise. I've done spurts of not drinking before. So this isn't my first rodeo. But at some point, you get tired of being mean to yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And again, going back to what we were saying earlier, I'm just literally practicing everything my parents taught me to do when I was a kid. And what I had to do is I had to frame things in a way where pretending I am my own father, like I am taking care of myself and little Brent shouldn't be doing all these bad things to himself. He needs to take care of himself. And what's so funny is I heard someone said like, you can't take care of others until you learn to take care of yourself, right? It kind of goes into the whole love paradigm, right? You can't love others until you love yourself. But I just interpret that as like, if you can't take care of yourself, how are you going to take care of others? And what I realize is the more I take care of myself, the more compassion I have for my staff, mm-hmm. the more I care about how they feel, the more I care about, like, I see that you're tired right now. Do you want to take a 5-minute break? And they're like, yeah, thanks. But like, it allows me now to see, you know, what's necessary stress, what's unnecessary stress, like what can wait, what can, you know, cause like when you have to pick personal fitness, like you make time for fitness, you have to make it and it's non-negotiable time, right? The same way you spend time with McKenna, it's like fitness is non-negotiable, right? And mm-hmm. I do have a little bit more time. I'm single and it's just me and my dogs and I have staff. So I have a little bit more time that I can move around and fit things in. But yes, I would add physical fitness to that list. Get sleep, eat well, do things you enjoy, and practice some level of fitness, whether it's yoga, Pilates, whatever.
Absolutely. And I think the next point is one that I learned a lot from you when we were telling stories about mentors and you were talking about Bobby and we were mm-hmm. hiring decisions. And mm-hmm. you know, and it's all about energy. Right, like a person's energy. Mm-hmm. So the next point is take care of your energy, cultivate your energy. And what that means to me is do the things, whatever, physical fitness, you know, mental downtime, whatever it is, that helps you cultivate proper energy. And Brent makes an excellent point talking about making fitness like a non-negotiable is treat your personal things, physical fitness, whatever it may be, as non-negotiables, because if you don't, you will negotiate and mm-hmm. you'll like, I won't work out today. I'll take on that client. It's all good. Sure. Let them know I can do it at 7. Right. Mm-hmm. So make that non-negotiable because that's your energy you're talking about. Mm-hmm. That's something that has a cost. It may not feel like it in the moment. And a little hack for me, cause I'm bad about that myself. So a little hack for me to not allow myself to do that or to do the other thing. I go to the gym, but I half-ass it because I'm still thinking of work and texting clients and whatever, mm-hmm. is I had enough foresight, luckily, to work out in a format that doesn't even allow me to do that. Mm. Like there is no compromising. So like I like to train in boxing, mm-hmm. you know, and with a trainer, that is. Like, so like he's got the mitts right there. He's telling me what to do. There is no slacking because mm-hmm. you're on his time, mm-hmm. right? So be willing to do the things that help you curate and protect and take care of your energy. That's really partially what helps you feel refreshed. Like, we've all been in those moments where, like, you're physically tired. Like, we had a great night out last night, and today I'm tired, but I just feel amazing. Like, my energy's right. And that's better. Like, somehow that ends up being better than I'm well rested, but I feel like shit. So really start to curate your energy, obviously on top of everything else, sleep, eat, you know, exercise.
Yep.
But I just wanted to make sure to point that one out.
Yeah. And one thing I want to add, just my own, even a personal testimony, I think the way it was explained to me, there's two types of stress, right? There's stress that happens to you, and then there's stress that you do to yourself, right? I forget. It's called like I stress or you stress or whatever. It doesn't matter the names. One is I'm doing it to myself on purpose. And the other one is something is happening to me that's out of my control, right? So to make a distinction, like if I'm driving and I get in a car accident that wasn't my fault, like I didn't ask for that. That just happened to me. So that has potential to be traumatic, right? That has potential to hurt me in a negative way. My body will respond in a negative way. However, let's say I jump into ice cold water, right? That is stress I'm consciously exposing myself to, and that has more resilience properties. If I'm working out, right, and I push myself, you know, my brain goes, oh, you don't want to work out right now. And I go work out now. Right. What those are exercises in is anytime that you do things that are difficult, that you do things that are hard, is you're learning how to generate like forward moving energy, right? You're learning how to like get that momentum and inertia started. Right. And, that is one thing that I'm learning a lot with all these practices and stuff that I'm doing is like, part of taking care of your energy is protecting the reserves of energy that you have. And then another angle to that is learning how to generate energy, right? Because a lot of times our bodies go like, well, you want to stay comfortable. You want to stay in the warm bed. You want to do this. You want to do that. And so sometimes teaching your mind and teaching your body how to listen to yourself, right? There's a Stoic philosophy saying that I really love. It says, train the body vigorously so it does not become disobedient to the mind. And I'm just like, I really love that. But this, for me, it just screams energy. Like, it's generate energy. Learn to redirect your energy. Learn to put your energy into the things that you know need to be done. And sometimes, just like in dog training, you have to work on certain exercises that allow the dog to perform in a real life scenario. And so when you're doing cold plunges, or when you're doing hard workouts, or when you're running an extra half mile to push yourself, those are some of the little character development skills in your mind that allow you to maximize energy.
Absolutely. And, you know, and it also goes to like meditations and whatever, you know, journaling, whatever that it's, it's all geared toward the same thing. Let me learn let me convince myself, because I think there's an interesting parallel in dog training to physical fitness that I like to bring up with clients quite a bit. Not jiu-jitsu, just regular old fitness.
Thank God, not
jiu-jitsu. It's funny how everybody knows what to do, but then why don't you do it? Like everybody who you've ever met who is like, oh God, I'd love to lose 10 pounds. It's like, well, you know how. You know what to do. And if you don't, you know the information's free. You know that for a fact. How many fitness people on YouTube, you know what I mean? So then why don't they do it? I find more often than anything else, they don't believe that they can. They know what it takes. Like I know what it takes to become an astronaut, but they don't believe that they can. Well, you got to do the schooling and you got to be physical. So a big part of pushing yourself in the moment is two things for me. Number one, lower your expectations today. Meaning, Brent and I are the kind of people that have like been in and out of the gym. Like you work out for a couple of years and you fall off and you get back on and you fall off. And whatever your strongest was, it's really hard for people to go back to the gym after 6 months. Because your brain just wants to go back to that weight and just push that weight again.
Mm-hmm. Your ego, your ego wants to go back.
Exactly. But you can't right now.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that you can't ever, because you did it before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But right now, it doesn't make sense. And because you can't, you lose motivation like crazy, right? You put mm-hmm. the smaller weights on and you're like, fuck this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say one big thing to do when you're trying to build that is be realistic today with your expectations today, because in 2 months, they'll be in a better place, but not if you just try to overshoot it and injure yourself and then it's over, right?
Mm-hmm.
The second thing for that would be to, when you're working on these things, understand that as you're pushing your body, as you're teaching it to struggle, that's a lot of where the life lessons come in that you can then offer to others. Like we said, mm-hmm. like you can't get blood from a stone, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what it's like to motivate a dog, even when they're tired, even when they're not sure, because you've been that person.
Mm-hmm.
You understand that emotional state. And you also learn, whatever it is, music or a personal trainer or whatever, like you also learn what are the tricks, the hacks that allow me to push further than I thought I could,
mm-hmm.
which then develops the belief. Because mm-hmm. again, people know what to do. They just don't believe that they can.
Yep.
So there are ways to establish belief.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's in the doing, obviously, but a lot of it too is find those moments of stress where you really doubt it and just try one more anyway. And the chances that you can actually do it are like really high.
Yep.
But now the belief is, okay, I can actually do 10 pushups and then tomorrow's 11 and then whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then before you know it, you're that person you saw online that you never thought you'd be that can do like 200 straight.
Yep. Yep. It literally is just, it's one at a time, man. And it's important. It's important. I don't want to harp on it too much because I could probably I could riff like 30 more minutes on that. But
sure. But allow me to tie it back then to dog training. A lot of newer trainers are scared to limit their clients, mm-hmm. like their number of clients,
mm-hmm.
because they know how to train dogs. They know how to find clients because they found them. If they're at a point that they're kind of too full. But the belief system is like, I don't know if it's weird karma. I don't know if it's whatever. Like sometimes business, depending on where you are, comes in waves, like the summer super busy or slow or whatever. And it's easy for people to just say like, you know what? I know I shouldn't, but fuck it. I'm going to take this person on.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get comfortable for the sake of your energy, your self-care, your fitness, your everything, your relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Be comfortable limiting clients.
Mm.
If you can reasonably take on 10, stop taking the 11th and then being pissed about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All you end up doing is stressing yourself out, which means all 11 of them now get a lesser version of you because you're all stressed out mm-hmm. and you're not as present.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else in your life suffers for the exact same reason. I have less time. I have money, but I have less time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's cool that you're doing well, but I don't even like being around you.
Yeah.
So get comfortable setting limitations based on what works best for you and your energy.
Totally. Totally. And that's kind of where stress that you're doing to yourself feels like stress that's happening to you. Like, oh, I got to work with all these clients and and that's kind of what is the precursor to disliking what you do. Right. And so that's something you just got to keep in check. Another thing I wanted to point out is in your personal life, right. Or employees, colleagues, like however you look at this is don't waste too much time with people who I guess for lack of a better term are toxic, right? And toxic means, you know, I'm going to help you once, I'm going to help you twice, I'm going to help you 3 times, I'm going to help you 8 times. At some point, you got to just be like, I'm done helping you, right? And whether that be clients or whether that be friends, whether that's family members, you know, whatever it might be, because a lot of times we get caught up in this obsession of trying to fix them more than they would like to fix themselves, right? And I've had conversations with many trainers who they ask, you know, I have this hard client, and you know, I'm all about the sport of figuring out different angles and tactics to try to help and serve people. I'm all about that. But at some point in your career, you have to have a limit, right? You have to have a limit. Like, I've done 6 sessions with you. You've gotten fired by 3 other trainers. I did my best. I tried different approaches with you, and I'm actually coming to terms now that it's you. It's not me. right? And again, whether this is a personal friend of yours, a family member, a relationship you're in, whatever it is, don't waste your time with that, because that energy can be put into things that are more productive and more positive that will increase joy in your life.
Absolutely. And the irony of something like that from the other person, because it's hard to do that, especially for someone like me, like I'm a total people pleaser, is I learned my lesson finally when I realized giving them all this time, it doesn't even help them. It almost serves as kind of this crutch that like hinders them. And that's when I'm like, you know what, like I'm allowing this to occur because I want to help you and I want to take care of you. And I'm not even doing that. That's what gets me comfortable enough to be like, I'm just wasting both our time. Let's not do this.
Yep. 100%.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
What's next?
Well, I think a couple lessons that I've learned in my life, you know, in regards to self-care and in regards to belief, like we were talking about, in regards to a lot of different things, is number one, don't be like, be impatient, I guess, in the sense that you're willing to work hard, but don't be so impatient that you're not willing to give things the time they need to grow. Like, to go back to your analogy of like, water the plants that need watering, not the ones that don't, and so on. It also is an important analogy to give them time to grow. Like, if you've watered it enough and you know that you have, any more water is not going to help it. It might even hurt it.
Yep.
It's time it needs now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I conceptualize that, I heard this, it was actually Zig Ziglar, you know, he's like a really famous, you know, there's like a mirror delay. And it was proposed to me as like, if you look at a mirror and you move your arm and it moves back, that's what life is really like. But as in when you're staring at it, but like the version of life where I put in all this effort and then it comes back to me later, like I work out and 2 years later, I look amazing, not tomorrow, is if you move your arm this way, the mirror is going to move as well, because that's the law of nature. Only it moves on a delay. Meaning if someone's overweight and wants to lose weight, whatever, I get that it's frustrating. Or let's keep it to dogs. If you're working a dog, how many of you have staff and have had this before where it's like, I've been working with this dog and they're just kind of not getting it and whatever. And I'm like, okay, go get them. Let's see. And they do a lesson and today it just clicked. Nothing was different. The dog just got it and it took a second, right? And I'm like, there you go. Stop stressing.
you're on the right track. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll sit them down. Like, look, you know, you're a good dog trainer, right? Like you're doubting yourself. And look, there it is. It just took a minute and you have to be patient. Sometimes it is what it is.
And sometimes you just have to believe in the process.
Exactly. That's that's why I kept bringing up belief, is like, belief is very important. Cause if you don't, what do trainers do? They try something else and something else. And then the dog never gets grounding because they're trying like six different things.
Yep.
So the mirror delay has helped me to stick to something. If I started today to work out and eat more and blah, 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 I know that I can gain weight or be more muscular or whatever. I know that this dog will start getting better. Just not yet.
Yeah.
But keep going and don't give up on the process, because when you give up, which everybody does, then you don't get there, right? Another thing I've learned in my life has been just, you know, like we talked about before, just setting time for yourself, your loved ones, and tasks, basically scheduling. Right. So, you know, it's again, like I know we talked about already, so I won't really waste time on it. But that was a huge personal lesson for me, was I need scheduling. I'm not really a person, like, I'm capable of adapting in the moment. Sure. But what's optimal for me is like, I just want to know what my schedule is. I don't care if it's busy. I don't mind. I'm a hard worker, but I just want to know. Though. It's when stuff gets like thrown at me out of the blue that it hits me hard.
Yeah.
Now, this is one I struggle with a ton. And this is, Brent has an interesting relationship with this one.
Oh, you want me to go? You want me to do it?
Oh, it's fine. I mean, it's here, like just Brent was talking about limit the time you give to people who basically don't get anywhere. Like a great example of like a toxic friend or whatever is, they just keep sucking up your time. Like you offer it and they're like, yes, I want it, all of it. And it's just never enough. And they never take your advice. And then it's almost like seminaritis. It's like at some point you have to take a step, right? My problem is kind of the exact opposite. I'm so afraid of being that person that sucks up time. I'm really bad about reaching out for help. Very bad. Partially because I feel guilty and I don't want to be that person. especially when I know the person who I would reach out to most likely is because they have good advice, which means everybody reaches out to them, you know, and like, I don't want to be like one more person, but don't be too proud or too afraid to ask for help. And the only other caveat I would put on that is be judicious a little bit when you're deciding whose advice you ask for. Because we've all done that thing where we ask advice and the person gives us advice and it maybe wasn't good for us. And maybe they said it with the best intentions and everything, but that doesn't mean that it was knowledgeable advice in the specific realm that you're dealing with right now. So find the person who can give you real, like, positive, proactive advice. And that's what professionals are for. Hello, therapy, right?
Yep.
But when you do that, you have to ask for it. I struggle with that to this very day.
Yeah.
But it's something that I'm mindful of and I try to get better at.
Yeah.
Right.
I would say every success that I've had what has led to my success in my career is I am not scared to ask. I will call people like how many times I fucking call you all the time, Mario?
Oh, yeah, like 3 times a day.
Three times a day, maybe 4, right? But yeah, I would do that to my mentors. If I had a question, I'd call or text, and I just ask. I ask for help. Ask for help. What do you think about this? Okay, cool. Sometimes it's just confirmation. Sometimes I just want them to bounce an idea off of them, you know? But every successful thing that I've ever done is because I ask for help. And that's my testimony when it comes to asking, right? Like I want to do good things in this world. So I'm going to interview and ask the people who do good things like we do on the podcast. Sure, you know what I mean?
And let me piggyback off of that with my final point is I know logically that that's the case. I know the conversation's going to go well. I know it's going to be quick. I know it's going to be this. I know that. I know all that. But there's a certain like resistance that happens. And it's same thing with people with working out, same thing with dogs, with training, with whatever. Is I know this is going to work, but for some reason I just can't bring myself. And I know that there's a lot of people that feel that, like, man, it's just a fucking text I have to answer. It's just an email I have to read. It's nothing. And I'm not lazy. But for some reason I just can't bring myself to do it right now. And it's weird like that. The best word I found for that is resistance.
Yeah.
And I found procrastination with things, it's not a lack of energy. It's not, you know, it's not any of that. It's anxiety. Anxiety creates that resistance and it makes you not want to do it. Makes you like scared of doing it. And so you don't. So my ways of eliminating resistance, because I'm like the anxiety king around here. My ways of eliminating resistance. There's a simple concept called one-touching tasks. Now here's a one-touch. Any task that'll take you less than, let's say, 2-3 minutes, like an email, a phone call, a text message, whatever, that takes up your mental bandwidth, like throughout the day. Oh, my mom texts me. Oh, my friend Brent texts me. Oh, my best friend Derek. Oh, whatever, whatever. And in your mind, while you're doing everything else, you're like, oh, shit, I need to text them back. Oh, shit, I need to write that email. And so, like, because it ends up poking at you all day, it keeps you remind yourself, it ends up eating a lot more of your energy throughout the day than if you just one-touch it, meaning the moment you think of it, get it done right now. Then it's over. Then it's out of your mind.
Yep.
That's one touching. But the limitation is 3 minutes or less. It's not like, you know, let me go clean the kennels right this minute. It's, you know, something fast, do it right now. Because if you don't, it's going to bother you all day and it's going to end up eating a lot more of your bandwidth and it's just less efficient. The second thing, which we touched on lightly, but I want to get into it just a little bit, batching tasks. It helps me to avoid like mental startup time to do a lot of the same thing at once. Because I'll like do a lesson with a client and then come sit down and we talk about an episode. And it still takes me a minute because you're still thinking of that lesson and how it went and whatever. So like there's spillage into your time and into your energy. Like starting tasks over and over again, even if it's the same two, every time you start it again and again, it takes a second mentally to like get in the zone, right? So instead of eating up all that energy by starting and stopping and starting, I batch similar tasks. Today, I'm just going to run through a shit ton of lessons. Tomorrow, I'm just going to work a shit ton of dogs with my staff. The next day, we're just going to do a shit ton of deep cleaning. And then I don't have to like switch back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Because we've all had that like flustered, sweaty moment where it's like, oh, I was just scrubbing a kennel, but hi, well, come in for your lesson. and you're like off your game, you know, because your energy was in this task. And then it takes you half the lesson to like dial in. And then now by the time they leave and you're like this calm, you know, collected teacher. Now you come back to the kennels and you're like, shit, where was I? You know, so task batching has been such a helpful thing for me. And then the final one was schedule critical tasks, really important, high value things or difficult things around your peak energy cycles.
Very good point.
And some of my favorite dog trainer, like content makers, I guess you could say, like, you know, Sean O'Shea made a lot of the books and the posts and the whatever, and Tom with all the stuff he does with the Good Dog and so on, Tyler with, you know, they've all said similar things. The hardest part of it, writing out the idea, shooting it, whatever. I do those things when I have energy. If it's early morning, if it's late evening, when everybody else is asleep and I can just sit there and focus.
Yep.
And in the middle of the day when I'm like kind of tired, like you're still working, but you're doing less, like things that don't require 100% attention. Like that's when I'll scrub a kennel. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think, there's a book by Dr. Bruce. It's called The Power of When. And it talks about your chronotype, which is like your circadian rhythm, if you will, right? There are some people, like I think over 50% of the world is, you know, they sleep, they wake up at 6:30 or 7, and then they go to sleep around 10:30, right? That's the general chrono rhythm. And then in that rhythm, there are peaks and valleys of energy. So like for me, it's around, you know, like between 9 and 1, I'm pretty sharp, like mentally. Then I hit this dip around 2-ish.
Me too.
And then around like 4-ish, I have a little up, but then I hit another dip right before 6 p.m. But then after 7 p.m., I'm fucking ready to go again, you know? So, so there are these natural dips, but there are people who they wake up at 4 in the morning and they go to bed at 8. And then there are people who, you know, they go to sleep at 2 in the morning and they don't go to bed. Or they go to sleep at 2 a.m. and they don't wake up till 10 or 11 in the afternoon, in the late morning, right? So these chronorhythms, they kind of help you understand what these peaks and valleys of your day is. And yeah, you guys can buy it on Audible or read the actual book. It's called The Power of When by Dr. Bruce, B-R-U-E-S-S.
Yeah, and that makes, I just want to add one quick point to that because you made an excellent point.
Yeah, well, we got to take a commercial break soon also.
Sure. Let me just make this point. So, you were saying some people wake up at 4, some people this, some people that. Like there's night owls and early birds and whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would just give everybody a very quick challenge. If you're like me, you know, I want to wake up at like 7, but I woke up today like at 5:30 just because, like no alarm. I just woke up and looked at my phone and it was 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
I challenge you then get up.
Mm-hmm.
Your body's not tired. It'd still be sleeping.
That's good. Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, like just get up and make some use out of that time. And guess what? If you are tired like earlier because of that, just go to bed early. But a lot of people find themselves in this, like they like trap themselves into this thing of, oh shit, I woke up too early, like I need to go back to sleep till 7. And it's like, well, why?
Yep.
Clearly your circadian rhythm is like, hey, let's do this.
Yep.
Right? So when you wake up naturally, get up.
Stay
and make
up.
Use yeah and make use of that time. And if you get tired, then go to sleep. Like, because we all also know what it's like to like, I'm gonna try to sleep till 7, I stay fucking awake till 6:45 and then finally knock out. Only now it's, you know what I mean, like I'm trying to go to sleep but I can't, right? Scrolling through Instagram or whatever.
Yep.
So that's it, you guys. Let us take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll wrap this up with some tips and we'll go from there. Okay,
so
we'll see you in a sec.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to Dog Trainers Podcast. You know what's a great way to support this podcast? By becoming a sponsor today. With sponsoring the podcast, you'd be helping us make this show the best it can be, and so much more. From hosting more local events, traveling throughout the country, and connecting with trainers from around the world. Ultimately getting you, the listener, more of the content that you love. For more information, please contact us at dogtrainerspodcast@gmail.com. Or visit our Instagram page at Dog Trainers Podcast. Thank you guys, and now back to the show.
All right, guys, again, thank you so much for listening. Season 2, episode 23, Work-Life Balance. Now, just before the break, I was going over a bit of my story and lessons I've learned, and Brent was doing so just before me, and we wanted to kind of wrap this up with just a general quick list of some lessons that we've learned together or collectively. So I'm going to hand it over to Brent and let's knock this out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of these tips are contextual, right? Again, we started this off talking about it all depends on your ambition, your temperament, how you are, how you've learned to be. So there's a lot of things that I've learned that I've kept, right? Versus things that are not my nature. So far we've gone over how we organize our time. We've gone over self-care. So we're just going to start attacking this list real quick. going back to self-care, one thing I really want to make sure that you guys understand, and I think this is one thing that I agree about. I remember, you know, I'd argue with some of my dog trainer friends who are parents, and then some are like gentle parenting, and like some are old school parents. And like, I see my sister with her kids, and she's a little bit more old school, not mean, but very strict and tough and things like that. And they're very compliant kids for the most part. But one thing that I like about the philosophy of modern day, of certain aspects of modern day parenting, is this idea of teaching kids emotional fitness, right? Teaching kids at a young age to identify their feelings, to understand their feelings, to learn how to talk about those feelings, and not necessarily talking about their feelings all the time to prevent productivity. But one thing that I really wish I would have learned when I was a kid is to know what that frustration is to know what that thing is called, is to know that I can feel this way and I can get through it and I can get past it. Because it's so funny, if I would have learned it as a kid, I wouldn't have been spending the last 3.5 years figuring that shit out. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. So, you know, I kind of grew up in that mind, in that, you know, like people pleasy, you're only important if you're helping others kind of mentality. And that led to a lot of suppression of how I felt, of what I wanted to say, of the things that I thought, of in essence, not saying that how you feel is not important. Now, what I realized is not communicating how you feel to the people that are under your charge or that you care about creates a real lack of clarity, because you might not say something you disagree with, but your behavior might show them that you disagree. So they see this incongruency, right? Mm-hmm. You might say you're not mad at them, but you are behaving as if you are mad at them, because in your mind, there's this emotional resistance that you have in your head, right? So one thing that's really, really important for everyone to learn, and this is actually something we'll touch base on a little bit in our Michael Ellis seminar that we do, is learning kind candor. Now, this term was given, was coined by Gary Vee. So he had a book called 12 and a Half that I think is a wonderful, wonderful book for anyone who's an entrepreneur, deals with humans. It's called 12 and a Half. He talks about kind candor. So candor is just kind of being straight up. Like when people say, you know, like people just hate me because I'm real, you know, and usually then insert an insulting thing, right? So it's like, right. Oh, just because I keep it real, dog. So technically you would consider that candorous. Like I say things that are true. I say things that are blunt. I say things that are factual. But just because it's factual or it's true doesn't mean you have to be a dick about it, right? So this idea of kind candor is, how do you frame the truth in a loving, caring, compassionate way without too much fluff, right? But being considerate and letting the other person know that I care about you, and I think it's important that you and I understand that we care about each other, but I noticed this and this about what I dislike, right? Because if you don't have those feelings, if you don't talk about those things, like I didn't realize I had an issue with one of my staff members for the last 6 months until we sat down and talked about it, right? And as soon as we talked about it, all of that drama just goes away, right? This is probably, I don't know if anyone knows this, for a good 2 years, me and Mariano's fiance had beef. And then we sat down and we had kind candor, and now we love each other. So it's like, it's for stupid emotional obstacles that just get in the way for no reason. And sometimes those resentments, those feelings, those that hurt that you just tucked away that you think doesn't matter now, it's so important to learn how to speak to other human beings and how to just get those things off your chest in a loving, vulnerable, but also strong way, right? And especially as a leadership of a company or leadership of a team or whatever it might be, that kind candor is so important. So I would recommend you guys read that book, 12 and a Half by Gary Vee, Gary Vaynerchuk. It's a really, really great book. Okay. But on top of that, I would also suggest therapy. So understanding your shit. The kind candor is just how to communicate your shit. And then just try your best not to suppress or hold things in, because that'll really, really affect you downstream. Not in the moment. You'll get away with it in the moment, but downstream it messes you up.
Absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's definitely something that I've struggled with before as well. I know that there are those people that are that come across a little too harsh. I was like, I had the other problem that you were saying, like it'd be incongruent, like I don't want to upset you, but you can see that I'm upset. And it helps clear the air. Like once somebody really knows for fact where you stand, it ends up being easier that way anyway. And once I kind of figured that out, that's more and more been becoming my like life motto, is like, I'm just going to shoot you straight. And I think that there's a certain peace in that. It's like, you know where I stand. I'm not going to be two-faced with you. I'm not going to be talking about it. Like, you just know where I am, right? But of course, there's a way to do it. Basically, it's how we deal with clients. It's like, if I have to have a tough conversation with you, I'm going to do it because it's my job and it's what you want from me. But I'm going to do it in such a way that reminds you I'm on your team. Right?
I'm on your side.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm on your side. But with that being said, this has to get done, right?
100%. 100%. Now, other stresses that could come up in your career is too much work. You might have too much workload. Maybe let's say you guys are seeing a lot of clients and you guys have a lot of business coming in, and you know, it's hard for you to be the front desk and also do the billing and also do the dog training and also do the selling and also do the thing. So honestly, hire help. That's going to be the very, very next tip. It's hire help if you can. And here's the funny thing, guys. Hiring help sounds easy on paper. It's easy to hire people. It's hard to keep them if you suck at the other human skills that we're talking about. So it's really hard to take care of others unless you know how to take care of yourself, right? So there's been, you know, luckily I was able to practice a lot on employees that weren't my employees. I managed another company for many, many years. But believe me, and Mariano knows, I fucked up a lot. I made a lot of mistakes. I had a lot of people dislike me for reasons that I was too stubborn to really understand. But hiring help and being able to treat that help and give them purpose and being able to guide them and lead them is probably one of the most stress relieving things that you can do in a growing business or as an entrepreneur.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That and being realistic with your availability. Now, Brent, when he was saying that him and my fiance had trouble, he was too polite to point out that it was my fault.
Yep.
Because, so like they have beef, but it's because of me. And it was because I would spread myself too thin. And mind you, I know that they both knew this at the time and they know it now and everything, but it was from a place of love. Like I wanted to be there for both of them. And I really tried super hard, but I went too far with it. So I wouldn't necessarily be able to fulfill all my commitments, and then both of them would get mad and kind of blame each other. Like, well, it's because you're always with Brent. It's because you're always with McKenna. But
it's like we're fighting over you.
No, and I understand that, you know, and like we had our really cool like hash out about that one night, and that's when everything kind of like, that's when the hatchet was buried, which was nice. Yeah. But all of that stress could have been avoided if I had been realistic with my own availability.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
100%.
Telling you, man, scheduling time, it saved me so much headache.
Yeah, and we've come a long way in the last couple of years, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, Brent and I are basically a married couple.
Yeah, practically. We're just, you know, two straight heterosexual males who look like brothers. All right, what else? Is there anything else we got? Or are we done?
I think we covered it, man.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we really hope that this episode was helpful for you guys. You know, we've noticed that the episodes where we're just completely real and vulnerable tend to be the best ones. And so we hope that you guys found some value in this. And, you know, we'd love to hear some of your guys' stories. So feel free to email us, text us, or not text us, but email us, DM us on Instagram. Email us at dogtrainerspodcast@gmail.com. Also, one more shameless plug we'd like to do is don't forget about our seminar October 20th through the 23rd out here in Los Angeles with Michael Ellis. It's going to be called The Art of Teaching. We're going to be talking about a lot of these human skills, actually, that are really, really important, as well as how to work with clients and how to be more effective in our teaching process. So we really appreciate you guys listening to this episode. Go ahead and leave it a review if you can. And if you guys are watching this on YouTube or on Spotify, make sure you like and subscribe. And we look forward to seeing you guys in episode 23. We'll talk to you soon. My name is Brent, and that's Mariano Alvarez, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Peace.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast, a podcast created by dog trainers, for dog trainers, or anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend.
We really hope that you enjoyed this episode and can't wait to be back with you guys. Be sure to follow us at Dog Trainers Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to punch the hell out of that subscribe button and leave us a review.
Remember, guys, this is your podcast. You're the best listeners in the world, and we'll see you next time.